Deal with Lexicon because I narked on Guitar Center, and because they were selling something for cheaper than they were supposed to, and he didn't believe me, so they can't sell it that cheap. And I brought him the next day at the NAMM show. I brought him the flyer, and he goes, "Okay, you call me if you ever need anything." And from then on, he hooked me up. You know, so I got this is the first one that was ever made. I got the first one out of the box. He went to my house, then he went to Carl Verheyen's house, and then he went to Paul Jackson's. I mean, it was cool, you know. And he talked. He spent a day with me going through it and everything. Okay, thank you. So this is
the amp that you're talking about, or the effects you.
Both those units. Yeah, both those units. And it's just very well designed because it's you know, like I said, you got the preamp. And it's beefy, isn't it? And I can even add gain to it, believe it or not. Pentatonic, who said pentatonic? Who was asking about the pentatonic? You were. So it's just, yeah, for me, it's a really good setup because it allows me to have a lot of programmability, okay, and a lot of sounds in one easy to haul around unit. Okay, I have to mute that though, but to do that, it sounds better. Okay.
You can play that live though if you got it.
I do play it live because I've got outs in there that I take to the board and then they just send them to the monitor up here, and I can use that, you know, that cabinet as well to add to it, but generally I haven't put it in my signal through the monitor on the floor, so I get it's a great live setup. Actually, it's really good, and it's especially a good setup if you've got to get on and off stage fast, because all I got is this pedal and that rack and that's it, I'm done. You know, I don't have to grab a bunch of pedals or anything like that, or wheel an amp off stage. It just works out great. And there's some, it's a Lexicon. You want to know what it is?
Yeah.
The bottom unit is a Lexicon 284 or Signature 284. The 284 stands for, it's got two EL84s tubes in it. Yeah.
And that's the whole effect pedal here.
No, it's just this is the preamp and amp. Down here. Up here is the effects.
Yes, I mean, that's
yeah.
The top,
and that thing is the MPX G2. Is it MXP? I always forget. No, it's MPX G2. No, they don't even make them anymore.
Oh, really?
Yeah, it's brutal. I've bought a couple others, you know, to have as backups because they're getting harder and harder to find on eBay. And then the pedal board is great, thanks, man.
And what does that unit and that whole package go for, usually?
Well, I think I bought. Guitar Center was blowing out those Signature 284 amps for $300 at the end. $300, and they listed for $12. Nobody wanted them. Just nobody wanted them. Just, you know, who wants a recording amp? You know? I mean, and occasionally I'll go into the studio, and there's one racked in a rack, you know? And, I mean, I got mine for, I didn't get it free because of the Lexicon. I got it for half. I got it for around $600, $700, I think. Yeah, I bought one on eBay for about $600, okay? About a few months ago. The top unit you're going to see about $800. I bought that one. I got it for about $800 new. It was $1,500 new. But back when it came out, I had a deal with Lexicon, so I got it for about half price. And then now on eBay, I'm seeing them for around anywhere from $600 to $800 is a pretty typical deal for that. Okay. The top unit. The pedal board, which you need to control it, is amazing because it's got patches. I've got 10 patches here, okay? Let me just scroll through my patches real quick so you can hear them. I've got number one here. Yeah, that's my Chris Isaac sound. I'm going to change
it.
Yeah, I program that. I do all my own programming.
So each one of those is whatever you want it to be.
Yeah, I can pretty much, I will wake up in the middle of the night with an idea for a sound, and I will spend the rest of the night programming it, going, I think I could do this. I'll show you one that's really cool that I like that I did with. Thanks so much for getting those speakers, by the way. That was awesome. It's great. So there's one sound. Then I've got my, you know, right next to it, I've got my ethereal. I've got lots of compressor. Some compression, chorus, lots of reverb, and lots of delay, so I can do my. Hold on a second. Here we go. You know, my swells. Thank you. That's my hammer dulcimer. That sound like a hammer dulcimer? You ever heard one of those? I don't know. Sounds like a hammer dulcimer to me. I don't know. But that's one thing. And then I got right here, I got a crunchy sound. Got my clean sound. I've got my lead sound. Sorry. I got my Jimi Hendrix sound. Okay. I got another funky clean sound. I got another lead sound. I've got my jazz sound. Sorry. Okay. And then I got my Coldplay sound. You know, just those are my 10 sounds in this bank. I've got, you know, 300 or 30 banks. So I got 300 sounds. Which I'll also use for swells. Okay, so I've got all those. Those are there. Now I hit one button. Okay, so let's say I go to this sound. I hit one button right here called effects, and it turns it, instead of being a patch list, it's a pedal board. So now I can turn off, I got my sound, I can turn on the delay. I can add a compression. What's here? Wah. The tremolo. Right there. Compression. Like I said, I can turn off the delay or reverb. I can turn off the core. You know, just I can do whatever I want. It's like there. It's like having my pedals on the floor right there.
You have tap delay?
I have tap delay right here where it says tap. And I have an AB pedal that allows me to program two sounds in each patch. So the AB switch will allow me to change five different parameters. So like I'll do, like on this one, I need to go back to it, okay? I have the AB switch set up to be like, here's delay. Here's wood delay. But if I hit the AB switch, it knocks the delay up to 50%. Oop, it didn't go. Hold on, there it goes. Okay, now the delay is a lot louder. Listen. Go back to A sound. And buttons are being finicky today. Humidity. Here we go. A lot quieter. More of a kind of an incidental echo. So anyway, but you know, a lot of things will do that. I mean, the Boss stuff does that. You know, like the GT5 had five sounds you could go, and then I think one of my students has a GT6. I think you can go to pedal board mode, but I don't think it's with a switch. I think you have to, I'm not sure, maybe you have to like lean down here and hit a button or something like that, which is kind of lame. But and the Brad, you know, the real, it's just kind of a model after the Bradshaw system, but just kind of incorporated into sort of being this big giant pedal. It's half the size.
I have a question.
Okay, question.
Do you ever play through combo amps? Modeling amps?
Do I play through combo amps is the question. I'm supposed to repeat the question. Yes, of course, yeah. I do. Generally, okay, no problem. Oh, is it?
No,
it's just there, it's in there.
It is?
Uh-huh. Isn't it? No.
It is.
That's all right. You can hang out with me.
Yeah.
Generally, this is just, like I said, it's easy to lug around, okay? I've got several amps. I've got a matchless. I've got an old Silvertone Twin 12. I've got a Marshall, an old 60s Marshall head, and I just got a big 212 cabinet for that. Generally, you know, churches, man, I don't want to lug it around, and B, it's going to be too loud, too out of control. This is 3 watts. I'm not even using this cabinet at churches. I'm going direct. I'm using earbuds. No one can hear me unless the sound man says they can hear me, okay? So there's nothing on stage. You hear nothing unless he turns it up. But in my headphones, I can hear everything. In my buds, that's a great thing. We have the Avium system that there's downstairs. It's great. I don't ever have to bug a sound man again. I've got 16 channels. I got drums, kick, snare, overhead left, overhead right, hi-hat, bass, keyboard one, keyboard two. You know, I've got everything there. I just dial in the sound I want, you know, and it's perfect. You know, No. That's the hard part. It's hard to solo through those things. You know, it's really hard to solo because there's no sustain. That interplay, you know, fortunately, the church I'm at, I don't do a lot of soloing, you know, occasionally. And then, so I'll dial up this kind of tone where there's a lot of saturation, you know, and it just, you know. A lot of echo. I get my sustain. I kind of have to add a little bit of artificial room and echo so that I have that sustain that makes it sound okay in the buds. Yeah, but the buds, that's the thing I don't like about the buds. And then in some situations, I'll bring an amp, okay, and studio some sessions. But mostly, 90% of the work I do, I use this.
How about the modeling stuff?
Yeah, that's what I'm. That's modeled right there. What you just heard was modeled. Yeah, but it's not. They don't call it modeling on this. It's just, you know, that's just a preamp, you know. I make it modeled by making it sound as much like guitar X or guitar Y I hear on a record. You know what I mean? I hear something. Oh, you were asking about, I was telling you about how I'll wake up in the middle of the night with a sound idea, right? Well, one night I woke up, I wonder if I could take a tremolo and control the speed with the volume pedal. Okay, that's easy to do, okay. But what if I hit the toe switch, push the pedal all the way down so the switch, I've got a switch under my toe that can control something as well. So if I click on this, it turns on and off the wah-wah, okay? So what if I made the toe switch turn off the tremolo but turn on a pan and still have the pan controlled by the speed of the, right? Controlled by the speed controlled by my foot, okay? So this is what I came up with. I'm going to turn down a little bit, though. And if you were close to this, you could hear the stereo of the pan. In other words, it's going to go from tremolo, which is kind of like this, to pan, which is like this. And then I could turn them both on, and they're both set at different rates. So then it's going like this. Okay? And in a mix, it's like, whoa! You know, it's like bouncing around your head. It's really cool with headphones. I love it. You know, it's like, wow, that's cool. So I'll try to do it. And this is not going to work in the worship context, but anyway, just for fun, let's listen to this. So here's, I got the tremolo so fast you can't even hardly hear it. That in church anyway. I don't know that I found many contexts to use it anywhere anyway, but this one I have used. Now this is a crazy one. This is actually a stock patch. Very rarely do I use a stock patch, but if you need a kind of an industrial thing, in fact, anybody know Jana Elira? Anybody know Jana that does the kids stuff? Have you ever seen her? She lives down here in Orange County. I just played on her, I was working on her record yesterday, and this is she's got a techno song. It's really funny because she's never done a techno song. It's a kid's song, kids, you know, worship song, but it's techno. And so I did. It's got a tempo. I can tap the tempo, change the tempo. 1, 2, 3, 4, 1, 2, 3, 4. I don't know if that would work. You know, in Germany, they would love that. I'm telling you. In Germany, I work for this German producer, and he always says, oh, make sure you bring your sound. I'm like, this is the sound they love, you know.
It's kind of like
an arpeggiator, but it's really a multi-Moog filter, or multi-filter, multi-high-pass filter. So it's just an EQ pops. It's weird, isn't it? There's a great little pedal, but this is, I like this because it's more programmable, but there's a great little pedal called the Sequa by Zvex. But it's like, you know, it's like, I don't know, $250. And it kind of does that thing. It's like an auto-wah kind of thing. So
I play in a synth pop band. Mm-hmm. I play guitar with a bunch of synth pops.
Yeah.
And I use like a bunch of delay pedals set at different times, and then a really, really deep flanger.
Oh, very cool.
It sounds kind of similar to that.
Yeah.
It's just weird.
Yeah, and I can tell you what it is. Let's see. Okay, there's a pan on there. There's a sweep filter is what you're really hearing.
Yeah.
Okay. And then I've got the sweep filter. It's random, but in time. So the pitches are randomized, but then the whole thing is in time. So it's kind of a cool sound. I mean, like, I don't use it very often, but I used it yesterday on that techno thing because I thought it sounded pretty cool. So, yeah, go ahead.
Tom. Okay. Acoustic player is doing his rhythm. You got a keyboard player doing a synthesizer thing. What are you thinking about on your guitar?
Okay. Yeah, generally, okay, the question is, I'm going to repeat the question because I've been told they're going to edit this out. And that's kind of what we've been talking about. You know, the guitar, acoustic guitar player's strumming out, you know, banging away, okay? The keyboard player's doing their thing, you know? Yeah, that's, and what do you do, okay? And, you know, sometimes you do what's on the record. If the worship leader sends you the CD, you know, what's on the record, you listen to that. A lot of times, you know, acoustic guitar's here, piano player's maybe in the middle somewhere. You can sit up here. Alex, play, I see you may not be able to hear. I'll turn down so you can hear, but play like, go ahead and stand up so they can hear. One, two. So I'm tapping my rhythm. Add delay, a little distortion. Again, electric guitar is a finesse instrument. I'm muting almost every string, except the top two strings. I'm just doing a D and an F sharp. Or I could go, that's also a D chord. And again, I can't. Oh, thanks, Alex. Appreciate that. I can't emphasize enough. Go to my website, okay? Because on my website there are like, so just my name, okay? Straley. Google Straley. It's probably the first site that comes up. Okay, my name is in the thing. It's Strahle. Just Google it and go to my tips page. And there's probably, I think, 40 or 50 pages of tips. You know, of just things like that. Okay. And I'm trying, you know, I'm trying to get new stuff up there. I hadn't done anything in a while, and all of a sudden I've been doing a lot more new stuff on it. There's even things about how to save money so you can buy another guitar. Seriously, it's like, it's just funny, but it's you'd be surprised. It's like, oh yeah, you know, somebody emailed me the other day saying, man, thanks so much for that, you know, your tips. You know, this such and such has saved us a lot of money, and we're gonna, you know, I'm gonna buy a new Strat or whatever, you know.
Don't eat for a month.
Yeah. Don't eat for a month was the first one. Yeah. So you know that is the hard part, is to come up with good parts. That's the difference between a good electric guitar player and a bad electric guitar player. Someone who can come up with parts. Sometimes you want to put, you know, you want to kind of double what the acoustic guitar is playing. You know, kind of play down there with him. Sometimes you want to come up with your own part. One of the things that I was going to talk about, in fact, was some simple parts. Let me give you a couple examples of some real simple parts, okay? Because generally worship music today is fairly simple harmonically, right? You know, when the music fades, you remember I was doing you were here when I did the loop? Did you hear the loop I did for Heart of Worship?
Right.
Okay. You didn't see it?
I did.
Oh, okay. You know, I mean, that could have been your part. That could have been a part. You don't have to do the strumming part. You know, you could just do that part. And thanks to the speakers. Mm-hmm. understand what's happening. Oh, not playing. What a concept. That's called natural dynamics. Guess what's going to happen when the guitar player comes back in? Your spirit is just going to go like, and this is secular music. Your spirit's going to lift. Watch. When he comes back in, you're going to go, it's going to be like, wow. Producers get paid a lot of money to be able to know when to do this. Just now he's strumming. It was basically the keys, bass, and drums there for a while. Now look. And then it goes back to the intro here. There's your hook. So start to try to think of, you know, think of yourself as a hook creator. You're trying to add, maybe add something that's better, you know, that makes the song maybe a little bit better, or maybe not better, that's kind of egotistical, but, you know, that takes it someplace. Think of yourself as, a co-creator, a co-writer, and that's kind of what you've got to do with the electric guitar, because it's like, you know, I'm treating it a lot like an orchestral instrument. You know, or not really an orchestral instrument, that would be like a violin or a cello. I'm treating it like an orchestra. This is an orchestra. Okay? Let me show you another example. The same band, Coldplay. That's a great record if you want to. Let's put it this way. The worship bands have been emulating U2 for the last 15 years. Now the next 15, they're going to be doing this. Those are octaves. Yeah, you get that. You get this part.
So I look in your direction, but you pay me no attention.
Fill in the gap. Watch, the vocal comes back in, the guitar drops out.
I know you don't listen.
Don't play.
To me.
You don't have to.
You say you see straight through.
I'll tell you, one thing that makes a difference between a good session musician and a bad session musician, okay? When you listen to a bad session musician on a track, it sounds like they're reading music, okay? When you listen to a good session musician on a record, you don't even know they're a session musician. Okay, they've created a part that make it sound like they've been playing in that band for 10 years, right? And that's my job when I'm doing session work, is to get to that place in 10, 15, 20 minutes where it's like I've been playing that song for a year. That's why I just have to know everything. I have to just be familiar with everything. And so when I get there, it's like, okay, I can perform it like I wrote the song, okay? And that's kind of how you get in the band, the worship band. You get to a place where you're playing a part that just sounds like it can't be separated from the song. And that's a real skill, you know. People get paid a lot of money to do that. But you need to start thinking like producers. Producers hear things and they go, don't need that, don't need that. Let's put this here, put that there. You know, they kind of put all the pieces together, okay? And then all of a sudden, you've got a hit record, okay? And if you make the worship band sound like the radio, people aren't going to notice you. And that's really the goal. They're going to start worshiping God because you disappear at that point. But if you're all playing too much, you're going to get complaints that it's too loud, there's too much cacophony, you know, people are going to be distracted. If you're playing the wrong part, if you're playing too busy, if you're all playing, you know, just there's so many things that you can do to take people out of that moment. And, I mean, music is incredibly powerful. I think it was Plato that said, give me the control of the musicians and I will control the society. And music has a way, you know, I was showing earlier where, you know, one note can make you weep. Now, I'm not going to make you weep, I promise. Ah! But, you know, you choose a certain note. That major seventh has a kind of a, I'm playing an E power chord. So I'm E, Bs, and Es. Es and Bs, that's it. I played that chord a million times. I'm at a D sharp to it, and it's a major seventh. And it's got a. It's like there's a need that's not filled or something. It's like this. And if you start with it, it even sounds more like that. So I'm going to erase it and pick something else. Okay, I'm going to change keys. I'm going to do the same chord, but I'm going to start with a major seventh. I'm going to put that seventh in there. And so listen to what it sounds like from that point. Ah, there's a resolution. Okay, so you can create just something as simple as that can create this lift. Now, did you have a question? Oh, yeah, I thought you raised your hand. So I caught you out of the corner of my eyes. Yeah. So, or we could do the same thing with I can put a suspended fourth on there. So G and a C instead of a G and a B, you go. And if I do a sharp 11, a sharp 4, it has a special, you know, a certain sound too. So like that would be, I'm going to do an A. Sounds a lot louder than the other ones, huh? Okay, you had a question.
I was going to say, you know, one of the things, and I've been on my worship team for 10, 11 years, is I was just wondering if anybody feels the same way. Part of what you're doing on electric guitar is you're listening to isms. I remember when I first started playing, praise band was the big thing. You didn't have these
right.
add seconds or whatever. And I got to be honest, when with the newer music, the last 5-6 years, I've had to, and I sort of resented it. I'm going, I'm dumbing down my playing because it was just like roots and fourths and fifths. But mm-hmm. you have to do that to get that sound.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, you do. Yeah.
And I don't want to sound
no.
It's critical, but it's like you almost what are they doing here? And it's almost like you're taking a chord pattern here, and for lack of knowing a diatonic pattern, it's like, oh, maybe I'll get it. The same chord here, and so my thinking is a lot of the isms have come from, I dare say, ignorance.
Yeah.
Like maybe this chord pattern being put up here, and maybe I'll alter this fingering.
Yeah.
But that seems to have become the norm.
Yeah. So the question is, I've got to repeat the question basically, but yeah, it's all right. But what you're saying is kind of, are we having to dumb down our playing to do the contemporary stuff?
Yeah.
And it's true. I don't know that it's intentional. I think it's what a lot of times what's going on is Christian music and worship music tends to be derivative, okay? It tends to model what's going on in society. There's very little music in the Christian market, and I hate to say the word market, but that's what it is. That's purely original, okay? So and there's a reason for that. There's a couple of reasons. One is because. It's very, very, very expensive to market an original band, okay? And record companies aren't even doing that much right now to spend the money to do that. There's a lot of original bands out there that aren't getting any promotion because record companies don't want to spend the money at the risk that it may not pay off, okay? So you think secular record companies are being stingy, we'll guarantee you that Christian record companies have nothing to spend on marketing. So if they don't have something that they know is going to work musically, right off the bat, they're not even going to push it. You know what I mean? They're not even going to make the record. And so a lot of the stuff is just emulating what's going on right now, and what happens to be going on right now, or actually about 5 years ago in music, is kind of a dumbing down. I see that tide turning. It's a pendulum thing. I see it. It's a pendulum thing. And I think in the worship context, I'm talking about Christian music context, CCM, you know, contemporary Christian music context, that's definitely the case. In the worship context, I don't have a problem with it. I don't have a problem with the music being fairly simple. Hymns are relatively simple, too. You know, what can wash my, you know, nothing but the blood. I mean, there's Amazing Grace. There's some phenomenal, when it's simple, it cuts to the chase, you know. When things are simple, they can be more powerful. That's right. If I've got to sit here and do a 13th chord, it's not going to sound good. But if I, you know. And I, nothing wrong with a 13th chord, but you just can't get that same power out of a 13th chord that you can out of a power chord, which is aptly named. Okay, so I think you'll see that tide kind of changing, but it doesn't mean you necessarily have to dumb down. In fact, that's your opportunity to start learning some of those extensions. You know, where's the second? You know, But like I said, the power chord has largely been replaced with the octave, which is even a simpler chord. It's just two notes. It's actually one note, a D and a D instead of a D, A, D. Instead of doing that, you know, it's... And that way I don't have to worry about what the fifth is doing. I don't have to think about it, you know, which is good because I can worship. And it's bad because I'm not thinking about it and I'm not being aware of what's going on musically. And that's, it's, you know, you should keep growing musically no matter what. And again, it depends on the church. You go to Tommy Walker's church and, you know, there's nothing dumbed down going on there. You know, they play some, you know, some tough stuff, you know. Try to sight read some of that stuff. It's like, whoa.
My dad's played with Tommy Walker and he said it's a challenge, you know.
Yeah.
And my dad's a good guitar player.
Is he? What's his name? Oh, Michael, I think I know that name, yeah.
He goes,
does he have a brother? Plays guitar? Jay?
Actually, he has a brother named Jay.
Oh, okay. I know Jay Leach. Yeah, that's...
No, but he actually plays on a worship team at a Four Square Church in California.
Okay.
And then Tommy Walker is on there several times.
Right. So. Yeah, and I played... Many of Tommy's tunes at my church in Shepherd, in Porter Ranch, the worship leader that I, when I started playing guitar there, did a lot of Tommy. In fact, I thought too much if people found out that Tommy was just down the street, you know, that they might change churches, you know. I've hung out with Tommy, but I've never played with him. You know, I've never actually played with Tommy, but I've hung out with a guy, and he's a trip. That guy's a trip. You know, talk about a person whose head's in the heavenlies. I mean, I'm telling you, you talk to him. I don't know if it's just me, he doesn't like me, or no. It just seems like he's thinking. He's like, you know, I'm talking to you. He's talking to me, but he's like looking over my head like this, and just kind of up there the whole time. You know, but that's, to me, that he's just like the kindest, nicest guy. You know, I don't think if it occurred to him that he was maybe being a little aloof, he would probably be appalled. You know, that's not his intent. He's just his mind is in the heavenlies, man. It's like he's there all the time. You know, that throne room, you know, that at the foot of the cross, I think he's there. I think he lives there, you know, and that's a compliment. I mean, that's a huge compliment. I wish I was in that position, but so, you know, any other questions? I'm just kind of riffing right now. I'm just kind of going with where you guys are taking me. So, yeah, you got another one here. He's hogging it up.
Yeah. I just have these questions. You know, I know you come from an R&B background, and that's one of the things, one of my beefs, is I love R&B, and a lot of today's contemporary music doesn't have soul or that groove.
Yeah.
You know, and so how do you approach that? I mean, are you going to, okay, I'm going to learn the isms to make it fit here because it... certainly a pentatonic or something else.
Okay.
It's going to be inappropriate.
Yeah.
What is your philosophy there?
Because I think it's my studio guitar player sensibility that, and the question is, you know, what about, you know, how do you keep yourself from maybe taking advantage of some of the knowledge you have when you're playing over simple things, when you have this, you have more, your abilities up here and what you're being asked to play is down here, and how do you keep from, you know, again, I want to keep the song simple because I want people to worship. I want to do what fits. That's the big part of being a session guy, is that you try to come up with that part that sounds perfect, that can't be removed from the song, or else the song falls, you know, doesn't live, you know. Like those two Coldplay songs, perfect examples, I feel like, that if you took those guitar parts out there, they would be half the song they were, you know. And so that, to me, that's the great challenge. I love it. And here's the other thing, too. I love music. I mean, I came from I don't have a background. I mean, my dad was a drummer. My mom was a... You know, my dad's a furniture salesman. My mom was a house, you know, was a mom, you know. And she played piano, classical piano. My dad played percussion and played drums and stuff like that, you know, every now and then. But so I kind of grew up listening to a lot of calypso and a lot of classical music and a lot of jazz. That's what I heard in the house. And then I grew up, I got into the Beatles because I had an older sister and all that stuff. I'm a child of the 60s. I was born in 61. And I just kind of started listening, and I just love music. I played in big bands in college and in high school, jazz bands. I've played in blues bands. I've played in, you know, funk bands. My first real band that I played in was a funk R&B kind of Earth, Wind & Fire Commodores thing in the 70s. We were doing disco music, you know, while, you know, all that stuff. And so I grew up, you know, kind of on that, but in playing in rock bands. I had my own bands doing, our own original tunes. And kind of in the 80s, it was like the Police, you know, it was a big thing. And So I've kind of just played everything. I majored, my major in college was classical guitar, so I studied classical guitar as a major. And so I just love it all. I don't care if it's simple. To me, that's a good thing, because it allows, again, the most important point is it allows me just to kind of get to that place where I can listen to the words. What are we saying to God right now? You know? And then if I can do something, use my knowledge that seems like it's a little above of what's going on, to kind of take it maybe somewhere where it wouldn't normally go. If I feel like it's not too weird, I'll do it, you know? In fact, I was working with this girl, this lady, Jana Lyra, and her husband's the producer, and I go in the studio, and I played this thing, and it was like, you want a kind of a Mark Knopfler Zydeco kind of thing, you know? It was like, you know, like Money for Nothing kind of thing, right? And that's not what, but that was kind of the part. My fingers are still sore from doing that, because I was... What was the chord progression? You know, and I was playing more simple than that, but it was like, at one point... kind of had, that's the kind of vibe, right? Ron really liked the part, and he said, let me go get Jana. And I go, oh, I know what Jana's going to say, because I've been playing on records of theirs for years. I go, she's going to say it's too weird, because every time, you know, and it was, you know, I've been doing this for a long time, and so I've learned a lot over the years, and actually that was, it wasn't very weird, but I just was joking around, because she always would say, Tom, you do the weirdest things. And in fact, I'll play an example of one of her songs that I played on, where I started out doing kind of the Coldplay thing. And this was years ago. I wasn't thinking Coldplay so much. I think I was thinking, I don't know what I was thinking, to be honest. But I just thought this. And so my idea was, what if I played, what if I told him, I heard a track. I said, well, you know, they'd already finished the record. I hadn't played on any of the record. And, you know, I was just over there because I was going to play with them the next morning. And I was spending the night there because it was closer to where we were. And I said, why don't I add, you know, he said, oh, would you add something to this? It's missing something. So I said, okay, let's try this. And then I played the part and I said, okay, now move everything but me over two bars. Okay. And I played on the off beats. Okay. So at first, when you hear me, you think I'm playing on one, but I'm not. I'm playing on probably the and of one or something. And of course, now if I don't have it, you're going to be all like, oh, man. Where is it?
So did they move you in the track, or did you actually do it real time?
No, they moved me in the track because, I know I have it. I should play some James Taylor thing and try to play that. Here it is. Okay. See that? It turned it around. And that's guitar. It sounds like synth or something, but that's guitar. It's a real simple part. It's like three notes, four notes. Yeah, I think I did something like that. So it's just this. You know, I think it was a... She's playing C chord. The G over B. I resolved the C to the B chord, and then went to the second of the C chord. It's just... Of course, you know, I'd always like it if they mixed me a little hotter. But, you know, can't have any control over that. But then there's times, you know, in the band where you need, it's time to go, you know. That's the electric guitar player's duty. I'm talking about some of the subtle stuff I'm talking about is on the slower tunes. You know, Heart of Worship, you know, that kind of stuff. So, let's see. Oh, what was another example? Oh, I'm sorry. I just like this band. Just simple, you know, guitar stuff. It's kind of a drone. Right, he's doing the same thing over and over again. So that's the same as a drone in one note. If you drone a riff and keep playing it, it's the same thing as droning one note. So, you know, eventually in people's head they hear that as a drone. Chords are changing.
Angels get a better view of the crumbling difference between wrong and right. I walk in the air between the rain, feed myself and back again where
I like it against the drums when the drums come in too. Again, you know, if you're in charge of putting the band parts together. And I like, see, they're playing the electric guitar like it was an acoustic guitar. You hear that? No, it's an electric guitar, but he's strumming it like it's an acoustic. So you can totally do that. Doesn't mean you can't strum it. The drums just sound great.
Look
how simple that is. It's a hit record, right? Sold millions of copies. It's not hard. It's hard to do. It's hard to not play everything you want to play. You know, it's hard to be okay when the worship leader says, you know, don't play on this song or don't play so much. That's hard. You know, it's hard to leave all agendas at the door when you come into the church. You know what? When I get a new pedal, I mean, the first thing I want to do is put that on every song, you know? Get a whammy pedal, oh my gosh, look out. You know, the first day with a whammy pedal at church, woo, 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 you know, you're going crazy. Or the, you know, the whammy pedal is this thing. I've got one in here. No, is that it? Is it here? Oh, no, sorry. I always think of who's the band that he overuses it. Audio Slave, but then before that he was in Rage Against the Machine. Tom Morello uses whammy pedal on every solo he does. You know, it's great, but it's just like it's a little overkill.
That's his trademark.
It is. It's his trademark. He actually has it. He took the innards out of a whammy pedal and put them in his guitar. So he has them here. He can do it all right with his hands. It's amazing. It's kind of cool, you know. You got to hand it to him, you know. It's like that's sounds like something Les Paul would have done, you know. If he thought of it, he would have done it. Let's see. Oh, and then of course there's a classic. Again, this classic simple stuff. I'm gonna have to go into this one a little bit. It's so simple what he's doing. What's that?
How are they setting the delay on that?
I think he's doing dotted eighths, but I'm not sure. Oops.
He's like stereo delays to
two. Oh, it's huge. Yeah. Yeah, it's huge. Yeah, it's huge. Different ways you good voicing, but basically he's doing D, G, two open strings, and then he's doing, you know, a D sus chord. You can think of it as D sus to D, or you can think of it as a G, little G chord to a D chord, you know? That's not even the part I was thinking of. At one point he goes... That's all he's doing, and the chords are going D. I didn't write a time in here, but you know, he's just doing a kind of a simple drone thing. You know, it can get a little old if you do that the entire song, but it's better than going through the chart and just playing along with all the chords and banging out all the chords with the acoustic guitar player. That's not a part. That's just strumming along. You know what I mean? And so, kind of this hour, I want to kind of touch on that. You know, creating parts. What you know, you almost have to think of yourself in a different light. You've got to think of yourself as more of an orchestra and less of a guitar player. You've got to think of yourself. You've got to think of yourself like a producer might. You know, how late are we supposed to go? Anybody know?
4:15.
4:15. Oh, we got another half hour. Okay. Any other questions? Right now, anything? Should I do that? Should I show them that the loop thing?
Oh, that's sweet.
Okay, check this out. This is something I might do. Is this right? Yeah. If I was leading worship, say, you know, on electric guitar, I might lead. You know, if I'm leading by itself, I've done this at church where I started on electric. You know, I started playing and I started the song this way. But I'll just do it for you. I even did this in front of the church, just like this. I let them be kind of a witness to my creation. Start for 3-4 seconds, stop. Not trying to time it. There's no time in there, okay? Then I'm playing in what key am I playing in?
D.
D, okay. What's the root of D?
E.
Okay. So then what I did was I turned out, this is just for example of what I did. You could do a lot of different ways, but I turned my tone knob off. That's why it's so dark. It doesn't sound like a guitar at all, does it? I can't believe that's guitar. Okay, I pedaled out. And I turned the volume up, I mean, I turned the tone off, and I hit a D note. And I pedaled it in. And I pedaled it out, I hit an A note. The fifth of D is A. And I pedaled that in, went like this. And put that in there. And then I put another D and another A, and we got this. Okay? Those notes won't clash with any chord I hit in the key of D. They should be fine. I also noticed I played them all up here. Okay? If I'd done something really low, it would get in the way of any bass movement I was doing. Like if I hit a D chord and I had this note ringing out, if I had that note ringing out, and I went to this note, it would sound like this. And that's not beautiful. Okay? So I kept it really high, so it's kind of sitting above this. Again, kind of thinking about myself, and that could be my part for the song. I could go like this, put my guitar down and get on my knees and worship. Just stay close to the amp so I can shut it off when the song's over. Okay? But basically, that could be, you know, that your part could be that simple. You know? And, but, if I wanted to, like in this context, I was leading. And I just...
Mm-hmm.
And I'll add some more to it so you can kind of hear what... So I can go back to layer option now. All loopers will have a layer option where you can turn it on and off. So see, I obviously wasn't layering there, or all that strumming would have been on that loop. Okay, I'm going to mess it up now. Okay, so I'm going to do another D. Oh, let me put a low D note now so you can hear... You don't want to have too low. Layering. Now I'm going to go back to the song. When the music fades. See, that doesn't work. It's in the, that note I hit is too much in the, you know, clashing against us. Okay, now I'm going to mess it up some more though. I can turn it into something. Still sing over that. Too. I'm not trying to play along with it time-wise. I'm ignoring it. But pretty soon you won't be able to ignore it. Fun though. Loops, yeah, you'll, if you get a loop, some kind of loop thing, and the great pedal that's great for that is the Line 6, the green pedal. It does that. It does that looper, yeah.
The delay pedal does looping.
Yes, it does. That delay pedal does looping, I'm pretty sure. So check, make sure, but I'm pretty sure it does, right? It does?
We looked online and it did like 16 seconds.
Yeah, it's like
16 seconds. Yeah,
so
that's plenty. I used three or four right there. Oh, yeah, it's more just an echo pedal. It's a great pedal. Yeah.
It's got reverse on it.
I've got 20 here, and I had a Jam Man that came with 32 that was great. They've got a new one. Gibson's got one out now. I forget. I think it's... yeah, but they've got one. Yeah, it's maybe called an Echoplex. I think it has 2 hours or something on it. It's like this incredible RAM thing. And you can take layers out, so if you mess up, you can take out a layer. It's really cool. You know, so I'm thinking about getting something like that, but it's like $800. It's not like just a little... And it's kind of a one-trick pony. I mean, it does lots of stuff. But, yeah, so I love playing with loops in that context. I've created a whole bunch, you know, that where I've recorded at every level. Like this, I'll show you. Let's see. I call them, my last name is Straley. I call them Orchestraley. It's pretty egocentric, but... so, like, his... That's like four layers. The same one later, though, 12 layers. Here's 17 layers. Here's another one. Three layers. Nine layers. Isn't that cool? 13 layers. People insert these on records, you know. Just use it as a loop on a record. Actually, one of my favorite composers is a guy named Arvo Pärt. I don't know if you ever heard of him, but anybody heard of Arvo Pärt or Part? You have? He's unbelievable. I mean, the piece, it's about 5 minutes. In fact, I've got it here. It just makes me weep. It's Cantus for Benjamin Britten. Benjamin Britten was a composer. And it's just gorgeous. And it's just this it's like strings falling, and they just keep falling, and they just, but it's climbing, and they're falling and climbing at the same time. It's like it's hard. It's almost impossible to explain. I don't even know how he conducted it. You know how it was conducted, but that's like I said. I kind of think of myself like, okay, got to find our role. Am I going to be the triangle in the band? I may just be the triangle in the band. You know, like I was talking about before, the James Brown stuff. I don't know if I have the James Brown stuff in here. I don't know if I've loaded that CD. I hope I did, but I don't think I did. No. Oh, wait, here. Yeah, that's from the Blues Brothers soundtrack. That's pretty busy, ain't it? Gotcha. Oh, yes. Dancing. He's doubling it. Anyway, so there's so much to listen. There's so much music to absorb. You know, you can't hear it all. But there's some of the James Brown stuff is just like 3-4-1-2-3-4. 3-4-1-2. I mean, talk about patience. You know, I'm way too ADD to just be satisfied with that. But, you know, I think it's a great lesson in the worship context. You know, it's just to try to keep it simple. And so, and I'll tell you, so when I remember playing with this, I was playing with this at this church doing it was like a Christmas thing. And the worship leader did all different styles of music. She wrote all these different styles. So the night was everything from country. In fact, she had a fiddle player, and then she had an R&B drummer. She had me on guitar, which I don't know what I am. She had a funk bass player, and she had a classical pianist. She was a classical pianist. But the band was just like, you know, this crazy. It was, I was trying to explain it to someone. They said, well, you know, we're going to hear a little jazz tonight. I said, well, the sax player is a jazz sax player. You know, I said, have you ever had a suicide? He goes, what? I said, well, you know, suicide. I said, you know, when I was a kid, we used to go to the fountain and go Coke, Sprite, root beer, orange, you know, it's just a little bit of everything. And you drink it, and it's like you taste them all, right? It's like, and I said, well, what we're going to have tonight is musical suicide, I think. It's like we're going to hear a little bit of everything because the band was just all this different stuff. And he goes, well, what is the guitar? You know, I go, what do you mean? He goes, well, are you Sprite? Or I said, oh, gosh. He said, yeah, I said, oh, I said, what kind of music, you know, are you? And I go, I guess I'm kind of a rock guitar player. I guess I'd be the Coke. And I said, the jazz would be the Sprite, and a country would be the root beer. You know, I had it all worked out, like, right on the fly. I was so impressed with myself. But what was funny was that night, I'm easily impressed with myself. that night, we played, and, you know, we're doing this tune, this reggae song. And, you know, it was very, you know, simple, you know, 1-4-5 kind of thing, you know. And my typical thing would be I'd get so bored at some point, you know. You know, I'd just be doing way too much, way too busy, right? Well, okay, now I got to backtrack. I was playing with this drummer named Will Kennedy, who's a great drummer. I was doing a Maranatha workshop with him back in 99. And I was so excited and scared to play with him because I was subbing on this band. It wasn't my band. I was subbing on him. He plays in a band called Yellow Jackets. He's an amazing drummer, right? He can do anything. He was downbeat band, drummer of the year kind of thing. You know, all these jazz festivals and stuff. And I was kind of nervous. And I'll tell you, I expected him to be all over the place on that thing. And he was like 32 bars of just the fattest, deepest grooves you could. I mean, it was like a machine. It was unbelievable. And his tone, everything was great. And I was totally humbled. I'm like, I am way overplaying. And this is 99. I've been playing for 25, 30 years at this point, most of those years professionally, and I'm just now coming to the realization that I'm overplaying. So that then now flash forward, and I'm at this gig, I'm doing this reggae thing, and I decide, okay, I'm going to be cool. Right? First verse, second verse. Same, you know, maybe this chord, you know, who knows. Chorus. Just going to keep the reggae thing going, you know, stay in the groove. Be machine. Okay. Now, second verse. Okay. Going to the second chorus, though, I thought, okay, now is my shot. Okay. That's all I did. That's it. The sax player was a really good sax player. I don't remember his name, but his name was Tom, but he was from Dallas. He was up there playing, doing his thing. He looked up, when I did that, he looked over his shoulder and gave me the biggest smile. Okay? He heard me. You know, he really liked that little lick I did, right? Well, if I'd been doing it the whole time, he never would have noticed. He would have tuned me out. It's like a child. It's like, I don't hear my son Alex talk to me anymore because I've long since learned to tune him out. But it's true. Dads have to be real careful. You know, moms do. You don't learn to tune out that frequency that is your child's voice. But if you're a noisy gong out there, and that's scriptural, okay? If you're a noisy gong, people are going to tune you out. Man, don't be. And God may too. I hope not. But you know, but there's that thing where if you're playing too much, people will stop hearing you. Okay, but just try it. Be a machine for three quarters of a song and do one slight little change and see if anyone notices. And I guarantee you, the drummer that goes, you know, it's like no one's going to compliment him on his playing. You know, maybe someone who doesn't know anything about drums is going to go, yeah, man, you're incredible. You were so cool, you know, doing all this stuff. But it's like the musicians are going to be going, oh, man, don't call that drummer again. You know? But it's the guy that can go, you know, 16 bars in, boom, boom. That's the fill. Will Kennedy could have done anything he told his hands to do, they would do. That's how good he is, okay? And he doesn't. He's up here, and he's playing down here, not because he believes it's beneath him, okay? But because that's what's required by the music at the time. Now, when he's playing with Yellow Jackets, you know, that's different. That's a whole other thing. But we're talking about worshiping. Worship should be set apart, completely different thing than any other thing, you know, than any other live playing. So, any questions? You like my anecdote? Yeah, yeah.
What's your opinion on Godin guitars?
Godin? You know, I don't even know if I've ever played one. I think that they're pretty versatile, though. Some of them have like a pickup, an acoustic guitar pickup, and like a MIDI send or something, right? And a MIDI pickup or a synth pickup. Is that right? Are you thinking about getting an electric one or an acoustic one?
I already have one.
Okay. Yeah, I've never really played one. I think I picked one up occasionally. I think they play great. You know, I'm kind of a snob, you know, guitar snob. So, you know, if Jimi Hendrix didn't play a Godin, then I'm not going to play one. No, I'm just kidding. But it's kind of like that, you know, as you go with who do you like their sound? Who's your favorite guitar player? You a huge, sorry, Lord forgive me, AC/DC fan? You know, then get an SG, which actually is a pretty cool guitar. An SG is a cool guitar because somebody has one. Who had an SG? Came in here. You got a lot of SGs. That's what you came up to me. Because it's like a Les Paul, but it's a little brighter. The body's thinner. It's lighter. It's much more. And man, if I had to stand here for, how long have I been here since, you know, 9 o'clock? If I had to stand here all this time with a Les Paul strapped to me, I'd be crying all the way home, you know. An SG's lighter, and it also has that thinner, a little bit thinner sound, you know. I kind of like it. But you know, Les Paul, if you're a fan of, you know, certain style of music, you know, the Les Paul totally fits in, or the Strat. Like I said, I've always been Strat thing. This is my Strat with Les Paul humbuckers in it, so it's got a big, huge, fat sound. And then I think somebody was okay. So is that kind of answer your question in a non-answering way? Okay, I'm just avoiding, you know, the answer just because I just don't know that much about good. But you know, good guitar is good guitar. If you know what, your goal should be to play it so well that everybody wants to have a Godin. That's just the bottom line. Okay, everybody wanted to have a Strat after Hendrix was done, you know. And Dweezil Zappa has one of his Strats. Do you know that? He's got his, Dweezil's got the one he lit on fire in Miami. He's trying to sell it for $1 million right now. Yeah, he's trying to sell Miami for $1 million right now. No, the Strat. It was the one in Miami. Yeah, that was a different one. I think he lit more than one Strat on fire. I don't know who has that one. But yeah, yeah. Well, that's true. That's true. And that brings up a good point too. You know, he said, "Why sell it now? It may be worth more in a couple of years." It's true. Although I think there's a bell curve to stuff like that. When no one is alive that was around when Jimi Hendrix was around, then probably it's not going to be worth as much. But you never know. But that brings up another point too about gear. And you know, I really have sold a lot of guitars and a lot of pedals and a lot of amps I wish I'd never sold. You know, so if you can, if all possible, keep what you have and just get new stuff and not have to sell and trade up. I mean, if you have to get better gear, and that's the only way you can get better gear, then you got to do it. You got to get the better gear. You got to show up with the good gear, you know, the best gear you can afford, because it's, God is worth it. And but at the same time, you know, it's like, if I can teach you anything from history of the last 35 years of playing guitar, it would be, you know, try not to sell anything if you can help it, because it's, you know, I mean, so then you end up like me and you got 40 guitars, you know, 40 plus guitars, and you're like, cool, you know, but I would have 50 plus if I hadn't sold some of them. So I could talk a little bit about soloing if you want. You want to, I mentioned in the first clinic kind of how I think when I'm soloing, and it's a mental process. Soloing is knowing your neck, knowing theory, to some degree, and then soloing. Now, I tell you what, there are guys out there that I know. George Benson doesn't know how to read a note of music. Okay, in fact, I know this Tim Pierce, this guy that does a lot of session work, plays on a lot of records, can't read music. And I can't believe a session guy can't read music. I'm like, dude, just learn, you can get more gigs. But he doesn't really have any problem getting gigs, you know. So it's not, there's no need, you know, and it's, you know, kind of a need to know thing. But I do find that playing. When I'm soloing, I'm thinking, you know, call out a chord like G chord. I'm picturing all the G chords up and down my neck. So you know the five main chord shapes, right? C, G, D, A, and E. Those are your five main, you know, my main chord shapes, okay? So all of the chords are kind of based on that up and down, like the major chords. Like here's G, but that's basically an E chord, right? Here's a G shape. Here's a G chord, that's basically a D chord. A D shape slid up to here is G, okay? Here's, if I take the C chord and slide it up to here, I get another G chord. If I take this A chord and slide it up to here, I get another G chord, right? If I take the E form all the way up to, I'm sorry, if I take the G form here all the way up to here, I get another G chord, okay?
So when you're playing solo, you're not thinking of a pentatonic scale or a Mixolydian scale, you're thinking of chord
more that than the scales, yeah. Now, if it's just a vamp, if it's a one chord vamp, then yeah, then I can kind of get into the modes and the scales and things like that. But generally, I kind of do everything. It, you know, it depends on the style of song. You know, my brain just depends on what, you know, what I want to hear. But you know, every chord has certain licks that just sound really good. You know, like you got this G here. Yeah, that was. I'm picturing this chord here, okay. But I'm playing blues. I'm playing basically G blues. But see, I'm seeing. I know G. This note's good. I know this note here. This is a C to B. And now watch this. I'm going to go up to the next chord shape. Now I'm on the D shape up here. See it? Now I'm up here on this shape. I'm thinking G right there. Okay, you think I'm thinking scale? I'm really not. I'm thinking here's a G, here's a G triad right there. Okay, there's the fifth, there's the sixth, fifth, three. Here's a one, here's a two.
Thank you.
some chords just have certain shapes in them, that, you know, little licks in them that come with the chord, you know? Like this chord here, this G chord, this looks like an A chord. Now I'm up to this shape. And this lick here. Just comes with that shape. I may not do that. I might do it on this shape, you know, on the C shape, but it feels better. You know, and then if I'm going to do some fast little run, yeah, maybe I'm thinking scale at that point. You know, I can think G Mixolydian if I want to go like a dominant seventh kind of thing. If I'm playing over blues, you know. So I kind of just start seeing the shapes, and each shape has its own. So you can just spend a week on one shape and just start finding, fishing, go on fishing expedition, okay? Then go to the next shape, this shape here, maybe find another G shape on the neck and go fishing there. Then you go to this shape and you're like... Okay, go fishing there, and then you go up to the next shape, spend a week on that shape. Okay, now the cool thing is when you get good at those shapes, I'm moving up and down, okay? So like you saw me going up and then down and then back up again. I'm going from shape to shape. But I can also stay in one place. When the chords change, I don't have to move because I'm going G shape here. Then I might see this C shape, and I might see this D shape, and then back to this C shape. So here I'm in G. See? Now go to D. Back to C. Does that make any sense? You know, I don't want to, you know, talk over your heads at all. I kind of let the shapes kind of speak to me and what's going to come out of that shape, and then change shape, and then that one has certain sounds, certain, you know.
Tom, in G, do you ever think E minor?
Sure. Yeah, yeah. Or when I'm in E minor, I think we'll think G a lot of times. Yeah, yeah. So yeah, those are relative. So the relative minor to any chord is if you got a G major chord, you go down a minor third, down four frets or three frets. I don't know how to count that. 1, 2, 3, 4. Okay. So if you're at the third, take away three, I guess, and you'd be at zero. So that would be a relative minor. So like if I was at D, what's the relative minor to D? Anybody know? B minor. So the relative major to B minor is D. Yeah. So you can substitute that. In fact, that's a great tool to use in songwriting. A lot of times when I'm writing songs, I'll take a progression. Maybe I'm writing something that's just, you know, real simple or something. So I'm like, the relative minor to C, I can throw it in there. And then the next time around, I'm going to stay on C. It's just a little change. You can do that to someone else's worship song too. You know, you can do open the eyes of my heart, Lord. Open the eyes of my heart. I wanna see you. I wanna see you. Open the eyes of my heart, Lord. Open the eyes of my heart. I wanna see you. I wanna see you. You can even start replacing chords. In fact, what was the one we were doing the other day? Oh, I know, it was
Jesus strong.
No, I'm sorry. It was
come just as you are.
Same song almost. Yeah. I'm singing the wrong song. Come just as you are, you know? And I thought,
come just as you are.
I totally substituted a wrong chord in the wrong key, but I liked it. It was like, whoa, that's different. You know, and make sure you tell the altos and the tenors so they can adjust their harmonies. But, you know, that's one of those things that that can be kind of cool.
Sort of songwriting, do you analyze chords and say, okay, this song would use a 1, a 2, a 6?
Okay, good question. Songwriting, do you analyze a song, things like it? Yeah, definitely. Here's the thing about songwriting. And I shouldn't be talking to you about it because I have no great success, you know. I've written some worship songs that are out there that get around a little bit, but I don't consider myself a successful songwriter. And I've got some stuff in movies and things like that, but, you know, it's just not like I'm not making any money, real money. But it's always been said to me, and I understand, basically knowing theory helps you analyze someone else's songs. And it doesn't hurt to know if you want to go, oh, I need a James Taylor type song, what he would do, you know, or I need a, you know, Beatles type tune, you know, then you know, okay, well, the Beatles oftentimes would use the flat four, you know, the minor four chord. And that's kind of automatically takes you to the Beatles era type songwriting. So knowing theory can help you do that. But when you're writing, you ignore the rules. There are no rules when you write because you're writing. It's you. Let the people that analyze what you wrote justify it. You don't need to justify it. If it works for what you're doing, if you can get your melody to work, that's all that matters. You're writing. It's your creation. You know, you do whatever you want to do, and then, okay. So let me just send you off with a blessing real quick, and then I'll let you all go. Okay. Father, I do thank you for this day. I thank you for this opportunity to get to fellowship with some other guitar players, frustrated guitar players like me. And Lord, I just pray that you would just help to bring back some of the words said tonight or this afternoon and this morning at the right time. And I just pray that you would bless all the ministries that these few lives in this room touch. And these ministries touch thousands of people. In this room alone, there are thousands of people being touched every week. And we just pray that you would be blessed by that and that you would get the glory in all that we do. And we pray these things in your son's name. Amen. Amen. Thanks, guys.
Come on, brother, show me my best.
Oh, thanks.